There is a human ability for connection and to connect with others that AI simply will not be able to duplicate. Again, that's coming from a system trying to be perfect, in my eyes, AI, to a human who's also trying to be perfect in a way, or the perfect dad or the perfect husband or whatever. And I can be broken with that other imperfect dad. I can be broken with that other. I can't be broken with AI. I can't do any of that, you know, with that. So that connection is, there's a huge loss with it, man. There's a huge loss with it, especially when we're using this technology. As much as I love talking to you through the phone and having this conversation with this podcast and everything, and it can connect with listeners, sure, absolutely. But there's so much loss, bro.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today I'm with Joe. Joe is the founder and CEO of the I Love You Bro Project. It's a Utah nonprofit organization that's doing groundbreaking work addressing men's mental health, suicide prevention, and ongoing personal development, all through evidence-based programming for men. But of all his accomplishments, being a single, full-time girl dad to his three daughters is his greatest lifetime achievement. Welcome, Joe.
Oh, hey,
Joe.
What's happening, man?
What's up? Hey, I was just about to text you.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Excuse the, yeah, I had my mom does a lot of our ordering through Costco for our stuff. And when you get the, you probably know how it is, you get a little bit older there. Here's the picture of this credit card. Use this number. Well, I don't know how to use yours and not mine. I was like, just go to add card. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Took me an extra minute longer than I thought I would be on a call with my mom.
No, you're good. You're totally good. My mom lives in town here with where we live in Texas, and she's got a good memory still, but there's definitely more reliance on me these days than there used to be.
It is, man. It's a real thing, you know, and it's specifically with, for example, like the guys who come to our support groups. You know, we have a lot of 60 plus year old dudes who come in, but I say a lot, I mean, probably two or three, maybe each group, but they extremely, like, as far as comprehension and sharing, you can tell that they're lonely and that they struggle when they're not with my group. So when I sit with my mom, I try to give, when I'm with her, especially in person, this is all through text I've been doing with her, but when I'm sitting with her in person, I try to, you know, because her world is so small. Our worlds are so big. Podcasts, nonprofits, normal jobs, kids, and hers is just her, you know? And so it's like, you know, when she's resharing, oh, did I tell you I did? And my brain, I'm like, you told me it three times, but I let her because her world is so small. Or she'll say, hey, why didn't you tell me you were going to do this and this? Like, it's stuff that I do. And I'm like, you know, sorry, you know, because our worlds are so big. But all we can do is just lean into just getting older, man. Gotta prize these last few years, you know, 10 years, whatever we have left. Good to be with you, bro.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. I remember when my granddad was 96. This was probably 10 years ago or maybe longer, 15 years ago. And his my grandma had died at that point, and all his friends had died at that point. And he would still ride the train. He lived in Scotland, and he would still ride the train into downtown Edinburgh, and he would have coffee at the same place that he would go with his wife. And he would talk to the server who had been there for a while. And, you know, he knew him by name. And that was his way of kind of keeping going, because all the people who were close friends of his, you know, weren't around. Started losing his hearing, of course. And what else can you experience but loneliness when you've lost everybody that you would have had a conversation with?
And that's totally true. We have loneliness is actually, let me double check. It's cool. So we have, let's see, 20 different things that when our guys come to each group, they check in, and they, you know, the question is, what challenges are you facing right now? And so you can have anything from suicidal thoughts, addiction, divorce. Loneliness is actually, we have 53%. We're at 53% of our bros. So I always take into consideration, I have a group of 10 guys here. And they can range from, you know, we have them from 19. We have them about 70, I would say. Is that our oldest? Just over 70. And 53%, so half of them, five of those 10 bros are struggling with loneliness. And, you know, attached to loneliness is abandonment, alone. We know through the data that those loneliness is the precursor to suicide ideation, particularly with men. Yeah, because there's a process there, and my mom just keeps texting me. Where we start devaluing what we offer. Yeah. We start saying, okay, I just lost my job, and so I'm no longer a provider, and I just and you just throw another thing in there. I just my uncle died, or you know, my wife and I are getting along. Whatever, a relationship issue with my kid. You add just two things in there, and then we go from zero to suicide ideation, like real quick. Normal dudes like you and I, just sitting here talking. So it happened with Aaron on the overpass, which started this whole thing. He just had a normal dude, good dude, normal dude, just had a couple things, bad things happen in a short period of time.
So Joe, I've got a little intro I'll read, and then I'll put that in there, but how do you pronounce your last name?
So you could just say, dude, I did one podcast this morning, with a really nice lady, and she asked the same question. I'm like, just Tuiana's good. Tuiana.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah. This is for me, this is just so you know, I'm aware that the only dad you know is the one you grew up with, and it's very difficult to know what fatherhood can look like for any other for a person who doesn't have that in their life, a father who was there. And you know, you think about if 50% or so of marriages end in divorce, there's at least 50% of people who are at least struggling with the idea of what does it mean to be a father, and how do I make that connection for my own life when I become one myself. So my purpose in what I'm doing here is to share what men are doing in their life to hopefully give men who are struggling a vision for what it could look like. So that's sort of the summary version of what I'm doing.
And very cool, bro.
This is a conversation, so I can edit it, of course, as you know, you've done plenty of these. But I'll do a little intro, and then we can just kind of keep talking about what we were talking about. And I'll have a few questions, your upbringing, what that looked like. We can talk about your organization. And then I'd love to hear the practical things that you mentioned in your list, the 1, 2, 3 of things you're doing with your family that you feel are making a real positive impact.
Sounds awesome, man. Yeah. Any questions you have specifically when it comes to men, dads, husbands, when it comes to mental health, that's really what I do nowadays.
Awesome. All right. Well, today I'm with Joe Tuiana. He is the founder and the CEO of I Love You Bro Project. It's a Utah nonprofit organization that is doing groundbreaking work addressing men's mental health, suicide prevention, and ongoing personal development. All this through evidence-based programming for men. However, of all his accomplishments, being a single, full-time girl dad to his 3 daughters is his greatest lifetime achievement. Thanks for being here, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, bro. I appreciate you, man. Absolutely the greatest thing ever to be a dad.
Can you tell me a little bit about your upbringing, what that looked like?
Yeah, sure. So I come from multiple cultures. So my mom's family, they came from Italy. And then my dad's family originates from the island of Samoa in the Pacific Islands. And so lots of culture in the house, just dominantly Polynesian, though. And so we had growing up in a Polynesian house, you're almost cemented in being some level of an entertainer, some level of, so you have to be singing or you have to be, performing. And it was true with my upbringing as well. My dad was a Polynesian entertainer, Hawaiian jazz musician. And, you know, since little kids, we had to go out there and dance and, you know, we had to perform. And so, but also what came with that culture, or what does to this day come with that culture of Polynesians, is there is a huge disparity in raising kids, being Samoan in a Samoan house, and raising kids as society would deem, or as I wouldn't even say society, but I would say, the book, so to speak, would have us do. But Polynesians, and that disparity in there is, you know, there's lots of abuse. There's lots of, that's emotional and physical, especially physical. Yet, you know, we'll shroud it with the word discipline, and respect. And so growing up in a Polynesian, you know, in a Samoan house was very difficult with my dad particularly, but it wasn't, there wasn't any rhyme or reason a lot to it. There wasn't, to a lot of the physical abuse. It was just you had a bad day and kind of get your butt kicked sometimes. So, but I mean, to this day, I mean, my dad's passed on, but I love him, man, with such a passion, you know. He loved us. He just was a physical person, I should say, just a physically aggressive person, but he hugged and showed up and was there for those types of things. I mean, that's kind of the, I should say, the example that I had. And so it was a tough, chain a break.
No, that's great. So you have your three daughters. Tell me a little bit about that story. Your daughters coming into the world, your own family.
Yeah, sure. So the man being a dad, like when I got married fairly young. I was 21, and like my ex was 20. Maybe I might be off a little bit. I've been divorced for so long, but I think we got married pretty young, and you know, we wanted to have a family pretty young as well. And when my firstborn came, my first daughter, it was very, for me, it was like, oh, I can do this. You know, I think as men, a lot of times, like, oh, yeah, this is just another thing. And, you know, and suddenly you have a kid and your level of concern just levels up, I should say. It just increases, you know, substantially. And I think it did that with every kid for me. My concern for life, not just like their life, but my life. As they've gotten, you know, especially as they've gotten older, but being a dad and then going through a divorce as a dad is, man, it's a whole other, these are multiple breaks in a heart that I think is required for a human, professional human being, is multiple fractures in your heart. And, you know, when you, you have, say, I got a marriage and then you got a kid and then another kid and another kid for me. And then you have a divorce. It's, you know, kind of rebuilding a relationship with them and rebuilding myself, you know, the kind of putting the pieces back together into a new, better human being, a new, better dad. So, but it's been the highlight, bro, just the absolute highlight of my life. There's just nothing greater than being a dad.
That's beautiful. Do you feel like your dad growing up, would he have said the same thing, even though despite all his failures, do you think he would have said he was also very passionate about his own family? His children.
Absolutely. You know, what's interesting with Polynesians is we have a warlike mentality historically and even currently, where you Polynesians were known, you know, like The Rock. You know, we have such macho examples out there as men and as dads. And with my dad, you know, again, very passionate, physical guy. But I think he would have said he loves his kids more than anything. I felt loved. I just got my butt kicked a lot. Same with my siblings. And I think he would say he loves being Samoan and he loves Samoan. Like it's so narrow. And I'm not saying those are bad things. I'm just saying with Polynesians, we're so proud of being Polynesian and we're so proud of coming from Polynesia and our culture attached to it. And family and God are right there. It's a family. God is everything in culture. And so I would say my dad, absolutely. He was a super emotional guy. I'm an emotional guy, meaning I show lots of emotion all the time. So I think I get a lot of that from him. So I absolutely.
Your daughters, they brought more of that passion into your life.
Oh man, with each one. And I think it's difficult to explain to someone who doesn't have kids. Maybe they're just married or they're single, but it's difficult to explain that process of, like I was saying earlier, that leveling up of concern, that leveling up of love that you have for others. I think human beings genuinely, you know, they want to do good. They want to have love and they do have love for others. But as you have a kid and then, you know, it's a reality almost hitting you, man, that this is a being that I created and that I am now in charge of and taking care of to the best of my ability. And it can be a lot for a lot of guys, overwhelming. And it was, I think it, you know, we have those moments, but for me, after every single one, it didn't get easier. It just got better. And by better, I mean, I feel like I got better. Every single kid that I had my experience growing, the wisdom of the mistakes, our poor first kids going through, you know, if you're the oldest or whatever, just trying to, your parents trying to find their footing, trying to figure things out and writing their own book, so to speak, on parenting. But by the third child, man, by the third daughter I had, I knew that this was what I loved the most in my life. And with each one, I grew in compassion and empathy, especially with daughters. You learn how to listen. You know, you learn how to, you know, patience for sure. A lot of those qualities that you can't really describe to someone who doesn't have a kid or you know, and you could sit there and be like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, that makes sense. But it's the feeling behind it, you know, the feeling, the reality behind it that I just got better, man. And whether or not I knew that at the time, now, especially I can, in retrospect, I just got better with every single kid, man. It was just such a beautiful blessing.
That is. How old are your girls now?
So my oldest is 21. My second is almost, this Friday will be 18. And then my youngest is 15, turning 16. So they're a little bit older now compared to a lot of other families in our neighborhood. Yeah. They're not little anymore. They're not toddlers. You know, I'm getting past the teens now, man. I'm going to that whole new realm of, you know, not just dating, but marriage. I'm just like leveling up, man. And so I always take it back to just every single time it just gets better and better. And that I had a kid, and it's just getting better and better as I've grown as a freaking dad, bro. As a human being.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You mentioned the idea of getting more responsibility as you get more kids. In your experience with your organization, what do you see with men who come in your organization who are at the sort of tipping point of they're getting more responsibility and there's this, they want to run or they want to face what they're getting? Do you see that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, it's a small amount, but we have some guys who come who, I say this gracefully, we have guys who come to our groups. It is an escape for them. And it's kind of meant to be to an extent. Our groups are to facilitate free sharing, connection, purpose, to vent struggles, and to receive support, you know, from a brotherhood. And so what we do have a small percentage of men who do come, and they are to accept any sort of accountability for themselves, you know, as dads, as husbands, meaning they'll come and talk about all these things and just spew it all out there and vomiting almost this toxic, you know, kind of negativity about, oh, just woe is me. I can't do this. I can't do that. And the reminder is always from the group and from myself with the group is, first of all, you can do those things. You can do this. It will be difficult, but you can do it. You are worth every second of it and every ounce of energy, and so are your kids. And the second thing is you got to take some accountability for the role you're playing in your own suffering. You got to somehow do some emotional regulation. Yeah, and just talk it out loud. I'm a big fan of speaking things out. Okay, I am angry. I made a mistake. I smacked my kid on the butt or in the head or whatever. I shouldn't have done. Like, vocalize that here then. You know, vocalize that. We have space for you to vocalize it. But then now what? That's the question. And so are you complaining just for the sake of venting with no sort of growth? Or are you in a place where you can say and own it, like you were saying? Okay, I did this thing, or this thing is happening in my life, and I am playing this role in it, but this other thing and this thing are out of my control. So therefore, since it is out of my control, I am going to just magnify what I can control within the situation. And unfortunately, we have, you know, some men out there who it takes a little bit more time for them. And the hope is always that they'll, you know, the group will support them and they'll find connection there. But we cannot be, you can't put all your eggs in one thing. You can't just be the group or just therapy, or it's got to be multiple things. And some of these guys, when they're looking at the checklist, bro, or that accountability, yep, I'm that, nah, not really that or that, or, you know, but that, you know, you got to, the checklist is all you, bro. It's just a matter of, you know, your growth behind them.
So tell me a little bit about that, about the process that you take men through when they jump into your organization. And what do you guys do? Tell me, start me from the beginning. Sure. What do you guys do for men?
So we're the only men's mental health and suicide prevention organization in the country that is evidence-based, meaning everything we do is data-driven. So we have, for example, guys who are interested in coming to one of our weekly support groups. We have them all over Utah, and we're growing, getting more. But when they do show up, they got to scan a QR code, and they got to, it's somewhat intrusive. It asks them questions about their current mental health and how they're feeling, what their current outlook is, some of the challenges they're facing, and what they want to get from the group, things of that nature. And then they come join us, and, you know, depending on the group, we got between 5 and 15 guys there who are there for different challenges that they're facing, but for the same reason, which is they want a place to share and to connect with other guys. So when we have guys who come in and they have, say, they're facing a divorce, we have, you know, it's a big one right now. And divorce is happening all over, like you were talking about. We have half of them or more these days that are ending. And these guys say they're going through divorce. You know, they're there to to find some relatability with another one or two or three bros who are also going through a divorce or maybe have gone through one already, and for some validation on some of the emotions that they're feeling. It's very difficult for as an men's organization to get men to show up to these support groups, you know, because there's so much stigma around just the words support group. It's attached to addiction. It's attached to shame. It's attached to, oh, you're not, you're mental, you know, or all these other things. So guys, they're not going to say that. Oh, I go, they'll cloud it or camouflage it with, you know, I got this guys thing that I do or something like that. And so when I can get guys to actually show up and not just show up, but to share, start, you know, vocalizing some of the emotions that they have, a lot of the pain, the struggle that they're facing. It's a freaking miracle, bro. It's a miracle. And so when these guys are showing up and sharing some of this that's happening, we have a bro, one of the groups whose wife just cheated on him and one's going to take the kids and she wants all the money. And, you know, it kind of sounds like that Hollywood movie that we've seen over and over that's been out there all the time. But if the reality is in the group, it's a real thing. And I see these guys in emotional shambles, just trying to grasping for air, grasping for some level of comfort and hope in their life because they're in the thick of really horrible things. And again, it only takes a divorce and a pending divorce and a wife or a girlfriend or someone to say, okay, you're not going to see your kid anymore. Those two things, man, they will push any guy to suicide ideation. And that's, I mean, it's very similar to what happened to my bro on the overpass when this all started. You know, just happened to be driving by a guy who was in a suicide crisis here in Utah on the overpass. And I just happened to say, I love you, bro, and reached out to hug him and was able to love him off the ledge, so to speak. But he's a normal guy, and he just happened to have a couple terrible things happened to him in a short period of time, which made him question his value and his worth. And, you know, again, we're talking about men, the worker, the provider, protector. And if we feel like if one of those things are missing or in question, then we start really going to dark places. And so when these guys are in the middle of a divorce or trying to quit drinking or just trying to make friends, you know, lots of us, we ditch our friends, man. You know, men, our wives are our only friend in a lot of ways. Yeah. We have associations at work and coworkers, but all of our friends, we kind of stop hanging out with them and seeing them. Whereas women, their network grows. They get more friends. I don't know how, but they get more best friends and they get, you know, the kids grow up to be adult friends for women and so forth. And so, whereas we're singularly devoted our relationship and energy, friendship energy into our wives. And so when we get a divorce, that whole thing, like I have no one, I feel like I have no one to talk to, no one to connect with, no one to be there for me. And so our groups try to provide that within the I Love You Grow Project. We have weekly support groups to give these guys some consistency, some structure, and some hope. And they're finding connection and purpose. And our data shows that guys are showing up to not only, they first start showing up for themselves, and then they're coming back for others. And so they're finding purpose within there. We need those two things, man. Connection and purpose. Those two things are men. It's required for us to be a happy life.
Your groups right now are primarily in Utah, or do you have groups in all other cities, countries? How does that work? How's your growth plan?
So it's, again, this started, I historically, I have no professional experience with suicide prevention or mental health. This experience on the overpass, which kind of moved me to do it. And so I just happened to think, okay, I think I can put on a support group. I think I could, you know, and it was all for this man. Aaron's his name, and loved him off the ledge, and he became my new little brother. So I'm trying to find resources for him, and I'm finding nothing. But I'm also finding on the same search that men are 80% of suicides. 8 out of 10. Of all suicides. And so, and it's shocking me, and it shocked me into, okay, well, I got to get help for Aaron. And I started then just creating the help that wasn't there. And so I started with one group in Provo here where BYU is, and it started growing super fast. And I started duplicating groups as I've gotten more and more of these guys who come in. They're finding purpose. I had started creating my own training program for these guys to become their own group leaders, because there's no chance I can run all of these groups. And so we now cover in Utah and Salt Lake counties, which is, you know, the vast population within the state of Utah. And the goal would be by the end of this year, my goal is to be that we have a group within 20 minutes of every bro in the state of Utah. As far as beyond that, yeah, like 20 minute drive, because I think as a, just a dude, am I going to drive farther than 20 minutes to go to this? No, I'm not. So I need something more convenient. In fact, it needs to be like 10 minutes, honestly. But for now, our goal is 20 minutes, which puts us in Utah geographically, probably at about 14 groups to cover the state of Utah to get 20 minutes or so, roughly. But the goal would be after that, brother, is to branch out. I would love to do Texas is a huge demand. After that overpass experience, I had people reaching out. I still get DMs, lots of them, people who are struggling, who want to have an I Love You project, something in their community. And so I would love to have, Texas is a huge one. Texas and California have gotten probably the most requests outside of other states. And so, and they're the biggest states as well. And so eventually, I would like to think that by the end of this year, we're looking at doing something out of the state as well.
Speaking of big cities and the advent of new technologies in those big cities, over the last 20 years, I've heard a lot of studies about boys and men, boys who are becoming men, losing their purpose because of their influence of gaming and smartphones and social media and all those kinds of things. Recently, I was thinking about AI, and AI seems to have this potential to take a lot of what we find our purpose in our work. So we work and we produce something and we feel a sense of satisfaction over that. To have that taken from somebody, what do you see as the outlook in there? It seems as though you're on the cusp of having a lot more people who will be trying to find their purpose, and it will be difficult for them to find it, depending on the industry they're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you thought or have any plans related to that new technology that will likely transform many of our lives here in the next 10 years?
That's a good question. I have never been asked that question. Personally, I definitely think AI is, I mean, I use some of it to create our content for our, you know, for our social media, specific marketing for men, that it can connect with men. So it's been a valuable resource with that. But what I do see, I can only tell you what I see and what I know. And so within our groups, we have many of the guys, many of the men who are very non-social. You know, first of all, I should say everything we do at I Love You Bro is in person only, meaning you need to, you can't, I have tons of requests. Oh, are you going to do Zoom? Are you going to do something? No, I'm not going to do Zoom. I want these guys to show up and I want it to be in person, and I want to have a connection and a connectability. I want to facilitate that way much easier in person to do that than it is through, you know, the phone. And so, but I see a lot of these guys who are so, they've been gaming and they've been on the phone. All of us are on the phone. I don't care who you are. We're all on the phone doing something. And the idea was that the support group could provide a place where you can't do that. I tell the guys, if you're here, you have to be here. Be where your freaking feet are. Your phone away. It's one of the rules that I have when I'm leading a group is I don't want to see you on the phone, bro. It's just, we're here. Let's be here then. And so as far as technology, it's got, it's great. It's a great resource. But I see with some of the guys who are in our group, again, judging observationally speaking, the guys in our group, we are their only social outlet. They won't even leave their house. They're at home working from home. And that, a lot of that started from the pandemic. And so we have everything in person, and we want people to, I mean, I can connect with you, and I'm connecting with you right now, you know, on a good level. But if you were here in person, man, bro, we would be, I'd be hugging you, man, and we would be right there in the grind of it. And I think AI, it can do so many things, but it cannot connect me that I can with you in person. There is a human ability for connection and to connect with others that AI simply will not be able to duplicate. Again, that's coming from a system trying to be perfect in my eyes, AI, to a human who's also trying to be perfect in a way of the perfect dad or the perfect husband or whatever. And I can be broken with that other imperfect dad. I can be broken with that other. I can't be broken with AI. I can't do any of that, you know, with that. So that connection, there's a huge loss with it, man. There's a huge loss with it, especially when we're using this technology. As much as I love talking to you through the phone and having this conversation with this podcast and everything, and it can connect with listeners, sure, absolutely. Yeah. But there is so much loss, bro, in translation.
I mean, we're on the same page. I'd much rather I was there or you were here. That would be far superior to what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would much rather. And the reality is, this is the future, you know. And so, the invitation for me to my guys or to anyone, you know, who's struggling with connection or who's worried that, you know, we're going to lose some of this connection because of, you know, technology and AI. The invitation is always going to be, man, well, you gotta step out of the house then. Put the phone down. You got to be where your feet are. And we say reach out and all that stuff. It's difficult. And men, we don't connect with that message. Reach out. Hey, man, reach out. We're not going to do that. What we do, what does resonate with us and is impactful to men, what I have found is that in-person vulnerability, that in-person confession, so to speak, that in-person, I am struggling. I cannot deal with this. I need help. And then there's emotion felt and shared and seen that it's like, wow, I can't believe I almost didn't come to this and I was going to play my video game or I was going to just stay at home and be on my phone. The invitation is always going to be, dude, show up, go. You definitely have to have, I'm all about social. You got to be out. And I hate it. Sometimes I hate it, bro, getting out of there, but it's a necessity, bro. We need to be able to get out and communicate and connect with others, man.
Love what you're doing. I think it is highly needed. And yes, there's so many men who are living in secret. And the only thing you end up knowing about them is that their life has fallen to pieces and it's too late oftentimes. And that's travesty. You know, it's sad that they didn't have a connection or weren't able to reach out before those things came to a melting point. So thanks for what you're doing.
I appreciate it, man. It's my life's work now. You know, my kids are, as I've gotten older and my kids have grown and they're going to have families and they're going to have their own life. And I think as men, we put so much, like I'll ask the guys, hey, what is your purpose right now? What's driving you? And what's the first thing we say? My kids, maybe my marriage, or maybe, you know, some for religious folks, God or something like that. What I have found through the I Love You Bro Project, through much trial and error with my own personal life, as a professional human being, I would say that you cannot have a purpose in an individual. Your purpose, or a group of individuals, your purpose has to be something that you can provide the world. That you have talents and abilities, and we all do. And it might be coaching at the high school. It might be volunteering and doing something. There's got to be some level of sacrifice, personal sacrifice to achieve that and purpose. And so when these guys are in the groups and I'm just talking to a friend, when the question is, I don't like to be that dad, you know, where it's like, hey, you know, what's your purpose? I'm not trying to be that guy. But the question needs to be asked. What is my purpose? What is it right now? Is it only my kids? Because that's not fair to my kids. My kids have their own lives. I can't just be getting joy and happiness from my kids or from people. Those things go. Those things go away. Then what? And so with men, it's the battle's always going to be for us to find purpose in our environment, in our community. And with the I Love You Bro Project, guys are coming to help each other. In fact, that's the number one reason. 83% of the guys, what they're hoping to get from our group, 83% are saying they want opportunities to help another bro. And that's what I call purpose, when you want to help something greater than yourself, serve something broader than yourself. And so we do, man. We need that purpose. When we're lacking it, it's starting to hit some dark places in our brain. And so better to have those conversations now, uncomfortably, than later when, like you were saying, it's come to a point where no one is going to be able to talk me out of whatever. No one's going to be able to reach me, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. Men have a tendency to not tell anyone what's going on, close the doors, and make the decisions that you can't come back from. I don't know why men do that. Maybe you have some insight into that. Why do men tend to go into secret and then do, and whether it's suicide or whether it's something else, you know, leaving their family before even talking to anybody or asking, you know, hey, this isn't going well, what can I do? They tend to make decisions that are hard to come back from in their minds. They've committed to moving forward with this.
Yeah, and
how do you bring men back out of that?
That is the ultimate question, isn't it? And what I found is it's unique to every guy. So what the data shows, and I love that I have this up because I can just tell you what I know. When asked, you know, when asked, men are in a suicide crisis or having an emotional crisis, number one person that, or I should say the number one, our support groups are actually the number one person they like, they're most comfortable reaching out to. Second is a therapist or counselor. Third is a friend outside of the I Love You Bro project. You know where our significant other is? Significant other, 16%. So they could choose all of these things. Who are they the most comfortable reaching out to? And then to pair with that, you know, what stops you from reaching out when experiencing an emotional crisis? The number one reason is the feeling of being a burden. That's 63%. Now there's a whole list of others: appearing weak, judgment, you know, discouraged. But it's a unique pie. It's a very evenly distributed pie when it comes to why we're not reaching out when we're in emotional struggles. And I think that's perfectly paired with why our spouses and our family members are at the bottom of the list when we are experiencing a crisis. And I think it tells a lot, which means our loved ones are, we're not creating, we're so worried about appearance and we're so worried about saying the right thing that we are forgetting the meat of it, which is we are not creating the right space for men to share. And by space, that's what I do with these, our support groups. That's what foundationally what we're doing is creating space for men to come and share. And if that space is not comfortable for us bros, I mean, we have different likes, but and dislikes, I should say, but the fact is 99% of men, we won't open up to anyone or anything that we haven't for sure felt some level of security, like whatever I'm going to tell you is not going to change your idea or image of me. You will not think that I'm weaker, you know, less of a man or things. I'm not going to share with anyone like that. And creating space within our groups, it's worth showing, man, I cry more than anyone in our groups, bro. I'm one of those guys, man. I like to show my bros there. It's good if you can get that out here. Get those tears out. It's good. You shouldn't apologize. I hate it when guys are like, sorry. And I'm like, no, don't you freaking apologize for nothing, man. You show that emotion because that's the only way you're going to show other guys that they can show emotion. And that's the only way you're going to show other. It's what I call an unspoken permission. It takes a guy like me, my stupid, ugly, crying face, you know, to open up to other guys. And then they're like, maybe I don't have to be alone in my brain. And so with the I Love You Bro project, the thing is we promote men having emotions, feeling emotions, and sharing their emotions. Right. They have absolute permission to do that. Those are the three things. And we're talking about guys, and they don't even have to be dying by suicide, bro. It's just they're miserable. They're just miserable, and they won't tell anyone about it. They won't tell them why. They won't tell them how what got them there. And so when we're talking about accountability as well, talk about those things. Bro, you got to share that stuff. I can make so many support groups. If you don't show up, then that's all that I can do. It's on you. You have to start opening up and being available to some level, a mustard seed level, where you can start sharing a little bit. And if you don't feel comfortable doing it at home, well, then come here and do it. And the idea would be you would grow at our space, and then your space then magnifies outside of our support group to your home. That's the grand hope. Then you can start talking to your wife more about it. You can start raising your kids to show a little emotion and to give them permission that they can talk about their struggles and mental health. Or else we're just freaking reprogramming the same information into our kids, into the world about, okay, well, let's just keep it all in.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm jiving with everything you're saying. That's awesome. I love it. I do. I love it. It's funny when you say it, when you speak it out loud, you know, even just the idea of being vulnerable with your emotions and the reasons that you're explaining on why men don't. I know that's right on for me, certainly. You know, the idea of I don't want to be judged by someone. I don't want someone to think less of me. And we learn over time it's just easier just to not say anything. That's the safest. That's the safest.
Exactly.
Don't say anything.
Bro, you just explain, summed that up perfectly. It's just better that I just not tell anyone, because that way I can not, like, I don't gain peace from that, but I lose the idea of war, more war. And so when we don't have a conversation, say, with our spouses, I mean, bro, they're at the bottom of the list. You know what beats spouses? What beats spouses is our spiritual leaders, other family adult kids, and they're at the very bottom, the spouse or significant other. And so if I feel like the space that's provided me in my own home or in my own relationship, if I feel like what I am about to share is going to cause a fight with my spouse or cause some sort of friction in the home, we're not going to share it, man. Why would we? We don't want war or additional war. We always got a war, a battle going on here. Why would I want it out here? You know? And so we'll always choose that peace of mind, literally, from not sharing rather than to be shared. And I'll tell you, one of the number one reasons, in fact, it's at 50% why men don't reach out for help, is they're discouraged by others. So I had a bro the other night, man, and I just cried with him, man. It was so heartbreaking. I felt so bad for him. He said, so my wife told me about this group. I'm like, oh, great. You know, what brings you here, bro? Introduce yourself. He starts talking a little bit, and then he says, I suffer with suicide ideation. I've had lots of thoughts of you know, killing myself. And, you know, we get that fairly often. And so, you know, I go sit by him and put my arm around him. All right, man, let's talk about this, bro. Tell me, did your wife know about any of this? And he said, yeah, I actually came out to her a couple weeks ago and told her I was having these thoughts and feelings. And then she said, I don't want to hear. And it just broke my heart for him. And that's kind of, not to say that that's all wives, definitely not. But within their relationship, within their dynamic, she provides the care and the empathy and the compassion for the kids, and, you know, helps with that and all this. And his job was to shut up and work, you know, and kind of that dynamic. And that's not unfamiliar to many of us, since we all have similar structures within our relationships at home. And so when we're talking about, you know, especially in the data, it says discouraged by others, meaning I did one time come out and tell you about these things and you crucified me for it. I felt I was shamed for doing so. So that is why I'm no longer going to be reaching out to anyone for help, for fear I'm going to have the same reaction. So I felt for this guy, and we could say reach out again. Well, I did reach out, and and it got me to this place. My wife found me the support group instead of me talking to her. She found one for me to talk to. And as much as I appreciate him guiding him to, you know, to us, we need to have I wish I could have a conversation with some of these, which is women in general.
The plan is to send him back to her eventually with language.
He's got to go back.
Talk about it.
Yeah, he's got to go back. He can't live at the I Love You, Bro project. We have an hour and a half for our support groups, bro. And we have guys who they have reached out. And now it's me saying, okay, let's give it another shot. But maybe it's not your wife anymore. That's out of our control. We can't tell her to accept it. We can't force her. We don't want to. That has to be something she wants to hear. So what do we have to work with? We got the support group. Do you have a therapist? No, I don't. Hey, man, let's work on getting you some therapy. You know, we'll provide them with some free therapy. And so we do the best. Isn't that men? We just try to do the best with what we can, what we have. What tools do I have? I got a wrench and a screwdriver and a freaking hammer and some nails. What can I build with this? Let's just see.
It's good. The irony in all that is that's really what men want, is they want the intimacy, especially with their spouse. Like that's the relationship they really want, to be the one to be close. And for whatever reason, man, that's a hard one, because there's so many hurts there that it's hard to overcome some of those, especially, I mean, one as simple as the one you just mentioned. That's like a jab in the heart.
Absolutely. And it's one that won't go away for a long time. He won't open up to his wife again unless she opens up to him saying, you remember that time where you opened up to me and I shut you down? I was wrong. And I know that now, and I've changed, and I want to have that line of communication with you now. Until that tough, uncomfortable conversation happens, he's never going to open up to her again. And that will go with a mom. That will go with a parent. If kids, they come to us. And I have been the villain sometimes with them when it comes to this. Kids come up to us and they're sharing. And we become this sheriff of sharing, where we're suddenly, you know, oh, I don't want to know about that. You know, only tell me the stuff that I want to know about. And we do that as parents, and we do that as friends. And it's until we can actually, again, creating the right space is much more important than saying the right thing. And when we start creating space that allows our kids to talk to us, open up our friends, our loved ones, don't be whining to me when your loved one is struggling and doesn't want to talk to you about it, when you've shut them down repeatedly, especially with kids, they give so many second chances, so many. We got to get it right, you know? And so, especially with men, you know, it's again, one thing to say, come to this group. One thing to say, reach out to me if you need something. Instead of saying, reach out to me, I lean into the proactivity of, I will just do, I will just check in. I will just say, so for example, my bro from the overpass, I text him probably every other week, maybe once a month sometime. And you know, I don't ever text him, hey, how you doing? I don't text him, how's work, or how's, you know, maybe later in a conversation I will, but the text that I send is, I love you, bro. And, or maybe the next text is, thank you for showing up, bro. Or the next text is, I admire how hard you work, bro. It's more of a statement rather than a question. We don't want to ask, hey, man, how you doing? Because what are we going to say, bro? We're going to say, good, how you doing? And then we got all that crap out of the way. And then it's done, almost like a, this masked conversation. And then the reality, the real thickness, the gravity of our struggles and challenges are behind all of that. And they never get talked about. And we never talk about them with the people we like. We just stews and ferments in our brain, you know? And so, yeah, man, if we can open up just a little bit more, just a little bit. Let's start with a little bit. And then baby steps forward, just a little bit, man. And then we can go from there.
Yeah. Well, this leads us really well into what you're doing as a dad in your own family. And the first two items that you shared with me earlier were being emotionally vulnerable and available and having transparent communication. So let's talk about those. What do you do in your own family? What does that look like to do those two things in your own family?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do so many podcasts and interviews where people just talk about I love you, bro, and men's mental health. I love it when I can, and I get asked a question on how I implement it in my own family, how I have learned and grown with my kids. And so with this question, I really love that you asked it. So I have with three daughters, again, very unique situation being a full-time single dad and raising these girls. I make it a point that we talk about when they get home in the door, they get at least 10 minutes of my time. They can come sit in my office here and talk about their day, tell me what happened, tell me all the really bad stuff, tell me the good stuff too, but I want them to just be able to talk.
And at the same time or one at a time?
No, one at a time. Yeah, definitely one at a time. We need one-on-one transparency. And when there's an issue, and we have them every day, of course, with girls, and there's something that comes up, you know, as a listener, I simply say, is that something, you know, you want some counsel for, or, you know, I can just sit back. You just want me to listen. And they'll be like, I just want you to listen. Sounds good. And so in my brain, I'm like, oh man, she should forget Jenny. Jenny's a terrible friend. What are you doing? You know, where all I'm vocalizing is that sounds horrible. That sounds heavy. That sounds difficult. And so I have these conversations with my daughters every day, every day. And it may not be formal. It may not be the first 10 minutes they came in. Maybe they go in and they take a nap because they're so upset or tired about a day, and they take an hour nap, then they come out and they start eating some food. So they're in a more of a place to have a logical, you know, conversation about that. But I dedicate time out of my day to have these one-on-one conversations. I mean, my oldest daughter has been getting out there dating, and she's like, man, I'm just, when I'm with these guys, and I don't know what to ask them, you know, because my example is you, whereas we just talk, you know, we can talk about all the stuff, and you will just listen. And with these guys, I don't know where they're coming from. Dad, what do I do? You know, or I don't know. They're not telling me anything. And I'll say, well, you can ask some of these, and I'll give her some helpful questions, you know, that help them open up a little bit. But it's key to have full transparency, and it has to go both ways. It has to be, okay, not only am I a great listener and I can show empathy, but also that I can mirror that transparency that they have with me, with them. So I will say to my kids, you know what really upset me today was this, and this guy did this today and triggered my anger, and I was, want to just punch this guy right in the face. Like, I say these things to my kids. Mm. My kids know all about my life. Now, do I share everything? No, you don't have to share everything. Mm. But the idea is that you share something. And through that sharing, my kids know, well, I know that my dad's doing okay. And I know he has struggles. I know he's freaking imperfect. And therefore, I can be imperfect. And I can have struggles. And I can have challenges. And I can talk to him about it. What better? Dude, it's such a beautiful thing to be able to have my kids come to me and share that they're struggling with something, an addiction, or they come to me first instead of just sitting on it, or an experience that they're, it's really been bothering them. Well, where else are they going to go? They're going to go either to a friend, you know, and go to alcohol or vaping, and they're going to go somewhere else that's not you. And so if I can increase the odds of them opening up to me about some things that are really struggling with, I will do those things. I will. And if that counts for me sharing what I'm going through, then I will do it. And I will do it all the time. And so that's what we do, man. We have very open, very emotional conversations. I have no problem crying in front of my kids. And my kids know that men should cry and they should not need permission to do it. And that I, as women, that they have a high bar for communication for men. They now want men who can communicate. They want men who are emotionally regulating themselves and, you know, things of that nature. And so it's just a beautiful freaking thing, bro, to be able to do it.
How does that work? How do you get past that? How do you get past the, and maybe you've been doing it for so long that it comes naturally to you. But I think about, you ask the question, you know, how was your day or something along those lines? And the answer is, as you pointed out earlier with men on men, it's, I'm good. So with your children, has that ever been a place where you managed to work through that, or did you ever have to? Help me understand that.
Yeah. Well, I think from a young age, even just my personality is very open. I have a very, you know, I don't give a crap mentality kind of a thing, which is I don't care if I've offended you, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do kind of a thing. And so with my kids, raising them since a little, you know, since they were little, we've had pretty much open communication. It's gotten way better since. And when I say it's gotten, I have just gotten at communicating and with my kids. But as they have grown up and as I've grown into the I Love You Bro Project and been a better communicator and a better listener, then now it's not, how was your day? It's, tell me about your day. It's not yes or no questions. So it's more, you know, or what did you do today that made you smile? Or what did you do for someone that, you know, you were able to help them? And if the answer is, you know, I can't really think of anything, well, then what can we do tomorrow or, you know, today that will help your sister, or that will help, you know, someone you see who might need a smile or a hug or whatever. And so it's not any, I think that is a lifelong process, but that doesn't mean that you can't start now. You know, why not have, because I'll tell you, with kids, if you can get them structure and consistency, they will expect that and they will have those conversations. Even if the first 10 are, I'm good, or I didn't do anything, school is all right, nothing really happened. If you get the first 10 or 20 or 50 of those, they know that, okay, well, I'm going to ask and I'm interested in knowing. I am interested in you. And I want to. And then the questions go from yes or no to tell me about this. What? And then more like, hey, I have this issue. Now with my kids, I can be like, I have this thing going on. I had a moment where a guy, you know, really upset me. And this is the way I handled it. What do you do to handle your anger? What do you do? When you can ask your kids like questions like for their, and you're showing true vulnerability. Like, I don't have all of the answers. And I need you, and I need you to share with me what has worked for you, what helps you. Man, if you can get to that level, that is, I'll tell you, it's a beautiful freaking thing. And it's not like we're void of freaking troubles and trials and arguments in our house, but it helps us in arguments. It helps us in the struggle and challenges that, you know, my kids yell all the time. I am angry right now. This is making me feel this way. I don't like our conversation. Not like you do this, but it's all we. Then I can label like what we're talking. I can speak out loud. I am agitated. I'm going to go to my room. I'm going to go listen to music for a while. I'm going to go for a freaking walk. And so I say that. That's like my keyword is, I'm going for a walk. And they'll be like, hey, Dad's not too happy right now. He needs to go for a walk. I go out there, man. I do some breath work while I'm walking a mile and a half or 2 miles each night, man. And I come back just a whole new man. And if you can show your kids how to do some of that, and that you are genuinely interested in everything outside of stupid grades and the basic robotic questions and answers, man, if you can get outside those boxes or that box, you know, of small box of things, then it really does super helps your relationship and it helps you be happier as a better parent, man. It really does.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. Sounds like you've been committed to your kids and to working on that communication. Would you say that that's what it takes when someone faces the, I'm good, thanks, it's fine, school was fine, I got an A, short questions, that there's part of that that is you got to stick with it and learn how to improve yourself as a question asker?
Absolutely. And I think you could start with those, but for me, I don't like yes or no. They're just so easy. Because again, yeah. I'm going to take it back to men all the time because that's what I do. Is we want to give the most easy, comfortable answer possible that's going to get me out of this line of questioning. So how are you doing? Good. Yeah, I'm doing good, man. Good. Cool. So I want to try as a man. I know that I can't ask those questions to my kids, or else they're going to give me the same thing. Your line of questioning. If it's how was school. Then we're telling our kids that only school is important. Yeah. How is math class? Did you get that A up? Yeah, I did. I did this and this. What's the follow up question? You know, what about them? Yeah. I don't care about math class. I care about them, right? And I think when we don't want robotic answers, we need to have less robotic questions. If you can, it's something I have worked on and have gotten better and better at, that I'm still failing and getting, I'm failing forward with all of this. That's all we're doing is failing forward with it. But I would suggest and offer that the questions that we're asking, these conversation starters, it's the same with these guys in groups. They have to be about them and not about how's work. Well, is work what defines who I am? How's this? Oh, is that the only thing you want to talk to me about? You know, and so I'll talk to my clinicians who are therapists who we work with and I Love You Bro, and say, catch them off guard. I'll say, what are you doing to keep yourself happy? They'll be like, wow, I've never actually had that question. You know, these are people you were used to asking questions, and yeah. I like to catch them off guard. Yeah, but it's a question that makes anyone, including myself, stop and actually think, you know, what am I doing to find some joy in my life? And if I have to think for 10 minutes about it, man, I got a problem. I got to do something. I got to make some changes. You know, and so but the answer to that question could be, you know what, I don't have anything right now. That's a really good question. Yeah. And then the responder or the person asking the question is, you know what I've found joy in lately is this and this and doing this. Then that opens up a whole line of communication, you know, especially with kids. When I can somehow show them my struggle and my challenge and my deficiencies as a human being, dad, and all of those places that I don't have all of, just like myself on that overpass, I did not check any of the boxes to be anyone to help someone who's in a suicide crisis. Not at all. 2 weeks sober. I had pneumonia. I mean, I none of those things. That's the worst person you would want to have in that position. So I want to tell my kids, you know, I am such an imperfect freaking dad. I'm such an imperfect this. I'm not crapping on myself, but I'm showing them that my imperfections have led me to be so much better as a human being, and brought me so much happiness and joy. What I would describe as sustainable happiness. It's brought me joy through the process of me doing this, and I failed and failed and failed, and then I tried this and failed and tried, but then now I'm able to have this conversation with you. Oh, this means so much to me. Thank you for sharing that with me. Thank you for taking this time to be a part of that process.
Your number three was saving your kind energy for your family. Help me understand, what does that look like for you?
Man, so in my brain, I want to say human beings, we have kind energy and we have nice energy. To me, kindness and nice are two totally different things. I think kindness is sincere and real, grit, gritty. And nice is a mask that I wear. So when kind energy, I define as, I always think of Street Fighter, the old video game. And I literally think of the bar, the life bar on the top, or any video game you're playing. Where you're fighting game or whatever, you got a life bar, and X amount of times you get punched or hit or whatever, and your level goes low. I literally think of that in my brain where it's like, okay, that's my kind energy. I have X amount in a day. What am I going to do with this kind energy? And so I reserve most of my kind energy for my kids. The second would be, I love you, bro, a distant second, because I do have to wear a mask, a nice mask sometimes in those situations. And then my job, everything else gets everything after that. Nice, as much as nice energies I even have before I just like, no, leave me alone. And so my kind energy I would define as I'm not quick to anger. I'm a better listener. I'm a real listener. I'm an intentional listener. I'm an intentional communicator. My kind energy is devoted to my kids so that they can feel the most love from me and support from me. And I think we use, as men, we invest a lot of the kind in our job. So with our associates, with our customers or associations with the job, you spent, say, 5% or 10% of the day's kind energy on this customer you're trying to close, this account or whatever, the sale. And then afterwards, you're exhausted, you know, from that. And then say your kid calls you, hey, dad. And then you're like, oh, hey, yeah. Okay. And then I'm saving nice energy for my kid and kind energy for my job. And that is just horrible. So I say, I say my kind energy is, I have X amount to give, man. I'm a human being. We're human beings. And so if I only have X amount, I am going to save it and reserve it to the best of my ability for my kids. And when I'm home, when I'm with them, they will get the best of me is really what is the real best of me.
I think that's a really unique way of talking about priority. I've heard people talk about, you know, prioritize your family. But that's a different level of priority. That's just such a great way of thinking about what we often do. And I know I've done that plenty of times. I come home emotionally drained, and that's what my family gets. Instead of going to work and being emotionally drained because I spent my emotions with my family.
Yeah, it's a weird concept. I get it. And my brain works at different levels, man. And I get crazy every now and then with my imagination. But that I think of a literal bar, a health bar. And it's the concept of, okay, well, I should be bringing my best to my job so that I can make more money. And therefore, I can justify that because I'm making money for my family. So that is a worthy investment.
That's what you hear
a lot. That makes me a better man, and it makes me a stronger man because I did that thing. I made more money. I used that energy to take care of my kids. And I think we don't even know. We're not even, again, we're programmed by society from a young childhood that, you know, men are supposed to do this, this, and this. Whereas now I can say, no, that is not the way. And that has not brought me sustainable happiness by doing that. It just caused arguments when I got home. It just caused this. I can put on a good, nice mask for work. You know, I think some of us still do that. And some of us may have a much less of a meter of kind energy than others. You know, mine is probably somewhere in the middle, maybe a little bit more. Because I find great joy in my kids and joy within the I Love You Bro project. But I have a normal day job that they only get nice. They only get that mask. And I would invite any, even if that's not possible for you, if you're just starting, is just to say, let's first define what nice and kind is. Kind is resilient and sustainable. Nice is just a mask. That's all it is. And it's necessary to have a nice mask. Definitely. I wear it for church. I wear it for the neighbor when he's out cutting the grass. I wear it, you know, that it's good to be a nice person, a respectful person to others. That's a mask that's we all need to wear. But the kind one is when I take the mask off. It's either kind or horrible, anger fueled, you know, miserable. So if I'm taking my nice mask off and I have underneath that just mostly kindness, it's maybe some anger and another feelings in there, but if I can show just that kindness only for and reserve it specifically for my kids and, you know, my mom will take some of that and, you know, some of these other things. But when I can just say this is this reservoir of kindness, it might be low, but it's going to go dedicated to my kids. If you can get to that point where you know, okay, I don't care about my job. Honestly, my job fires me, or if I quit, they replace me in, you know, a week. I cannot quit my job as a dad. I cannot quit my job as a husband. I cannot quit my job as a best friend. I need to reserve being kind for the people who deserve it the most. And those are the family. Those are the kids.
Wonderful. This is a final question here. What's the, is there And what is it? The underlying reason that you are doing these things with your family? Is there a value that you want to teach your kids or for them to walk away with? What is that? If there is something underneath all this that motivates you, do all these things we just talked about.
Yeah, man, it's kind of, before my motivation, having a crappy example as a dad, not a crappy, but example growing up, that I had so many wishes and wants that I wish my dad would have fulfilled for me. I wish I could have done this with them. I wish he would have done this for me. And so I take those wishes and wants that I had from my childhood and then implement them as a parent. And so with my kids, I would love it if by the end of my life or, when I die, if my kids could say at my funeral that I showed up, that I was there. And not only was I just there, but that I listened and that I loved, and that my motivation forever for the rest of my life will be for my kids to have joy, and to be able to recognize it when it comes. And it also be able to recognize the other side of joy and to accept it for what it is, and that you can struggle with it and you don't have to struggle with it alone. And so for them to be a little bit more educated on on their emotions and to be able to pass that down and to completely break the chain, like I was saying, of abuse and of whether that be emotional, physical, to limit the amount of, to make it so that the trauma that they feel and that they experience does not come from me. It comes from an outside source, but that I was a source for when those experiences happened, that I was a source that they came to for comfort and respite from the outside world. That would be my ultimate, that is always going to be my ultimate thing. And I would say that with all of my close relationships, that I would hope that I was that person for them, That is my objective, bro. And with these guys who come into the I Love You Bro project, to give them slices, of that. Not the pie like I give the kids, but to give them little slices of hope and perseverance and communication. That is my life's work from here on out, man, that I get so much joy from. And I had no idea it existed, this fountain of joy, until that overpass. And the overpass taught me that horrible things and being as low and talking bad about yourself and just feeling like I was not that place. I was rock bottom. To figure out through that process and that event that rock bottom is just such a beautiful place to start a firm foundation of a great life. I would hope that it doesn't take rock bottom for other bros out there, other men, for us to realize that. But sometimes, unfortunately, it has to be. And so the idea that we don't have to struggle alone, talk about emotions that we can share, that we can have real conversations and still be real men would be, it's going to be the life's work for the rest of my life, bro.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for being with me today. I very much appreciate your time.
That was awesome, man. I really, really loved this, man. It was really awesome, bro. I appreciate you.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.